May it please the Court, my name is Anders Johnson. I'm representing the appellant, Omni Yu. He's a matter of him seeking for withholding removal with regard to his persecution on account of the one-child policy, as well as his membership in the Mormon Church in China. It's our position that there was substantial evidence to support an adverse credibility ruling.
Let's back up a minute. This begins with your statement of the case begins with this is an asylum case. Is it an asylum case?
It is not. The no, court does not
have. It's an erroneous statement. Okay. Because of the one-year problem.
That's correct. And the basis for the persecution is his membership in the Mormon Church, which basically, well, I want to say tortured, but basically he was persecuted with being detained for 14 days by the Chinese authorities. He also was
well, he testified he's beaten up. Yes, and yet that's, I think, one of the more serious problems, because in his written statement he identified his torturers, the people that beat him up, as the police. In his testimony he said it was the other inmates.
Well, I
see. Pretty glaring difference.
Well, in his statement, you know, when he says that he was inhumanely tortured, he goes right on in the same sentence to talk about the inmates that he was with, who did beat him up on several occasions, leaving him with bruises on his arms. So I think perhaps it's a more of a poorly written statement rather than that he's saying that he was not tortured, or that he was tortured by the police.
But counsel, if I may ask, don't these inconsistencies, whether it was the police or the inmates, go to the very heart of his claim?
In his testimony, he never there's an issue as to the statement of whether he was handcuffed, shackled, or conned in that statement. He never testified to that. I think it's there's even in the immigration judge was questioned whether or not that was an error in terms of Dr. O'Meara, who was the psychiatrist.
And what does the doctor have? I thought the main point of the doctor was to deal with the asylum timeliness question.
Well, there was a statement in the doctor's report which baton was used on his legs. The court used that as an additional evidence of an inconsistent statement, in that he told the doctor that this happened even if he did not testify. And the judge, immigration judge, did indicate that could be an error on the part of the doctor.
What could be an error on the part of the doctor?
In that perhaps it was not stated.
Make up such detail. I mean, a doctor.
You don't know. Yeah. I would submit I don't know.
So with an array of questions and I don't knows, and maybe this explains it, how can we say that the immigration judge's decision was not supported by substantial evidence? So how can we say that the evidence compelled a different result if even you acknowledge some of these things are just kind of, I don't know?
Because I think the testimony overall in the individual hearing that was held was consistent.
But what matters is where he's not consistent.
And that would be with regard to the one issue, which is the...
Isn't that substantial evidence sufficient to support a determination by the immigration judge? Our review here is for substantial evidence, not whether we would reach a different decision.
But at the same time, he did not testify about that. He never said that it didn't happen. He was to testify to what he said. the immigration judge never expanded upon, nor did the district counsel, in terms of why he made this statement, or even in Dr. O'Neill's report. But at the same time, he explained why he didn't mention that in his testimony. I think more, in addition to the issue of the inconsistent statements, is the fact that he also has the claim under the one-child policy where his wife was.
But that is specifically waived at the hearing before the IJ.
I don't think that the waiver in the end was accepted. The judge did make specific findings with regard to not only the testimony of Mr. Yu with regard to the sterilization and the documents presented. The judge also made a legal conclusion denying that claim.
Where is that?
Documents and the testimony of the respondent.
Well, he's talking about that, as I understand it, more to suggest that this respondent just wasn't in general telling the truth. But where did he come up with any holding on the?
He states that it did not constitute past persecution.
I'm sorry?
He states that it did not constitute
past persecution. Respondent through counsel waived any claim based on coercive family planning practices. That's on page 16 of his oral decision, page 60 of the record.
The court goes on, however, to actually go through the claim and make a determination of the claim was not valid based on the fact that he determined that the sterilization was voluntary.
So they're potentially two separate grounds, one of them being waiver, the other it's a loser anyway.
Well,
you challenge the waiver ground?
I believe that because the judge ended up, in essence, ignoring the waiver ground.
He didn't ignore it. He
counsel, you expressly waived, did you not?
I'm sorry?
You expressly waived any claims based upon sterilization, did you not?
That was done in the trial, yes. My argument is that the judge ended up and that therefore the claim was, even on appeal, preserved. Voluntary, to keep their power and their water and have their children go to school, which is not a very voluntary organization. We would submit that the judge did not accept actual factual determinations.
Was this issue raised to the BIA?
Yes, it was.
Where?
It was raised, and I apologize, Ron, I didn't bring my record. The BIA did not address any of the issues specifically other than the credibility, but there was a discussion with regard to his, with regard to the one-child policy sterilization issue and the fact that he qualified for asylum based on.
As I recall the record, you stated the issue in your brief to the BIA and in this court. Is that correct? Thank you.
I'll reserve it at time. You should do it now.
I'll reserve it to you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Rebecca Hoffberg on behalf of the Attorney General, the respondent in this case.
Counsel, before you begin, do you concede that we have jurisdiction under the Real ID Act?
You do not have jurisdiction over the asylum application, as Judge Berzon correctly pointed out at the beginning. He did not dispute the timeliness of the asylum application. He erroneously states in his brief that this case is about asylum. It's not, as Judge Berzon pointed out. So you do not have jurisdiction over the asylum application. You would have jurisdiction to review for substantial evidence whether the record compels a conclusion other than the one found by the immigration judge and the board as to the withholding and CAT claims.
Thank you. I just wanted to clear that up. Thank you.
So Mr. Yu sought, initially he did seek asylum, withholding of removal, and CAT protection. His claim was found to be insufficient by first an asylum officer, then an immigration judge, and then the board. They all came to the same conclusion that he was ineligible for relief. Specifically, he said during his hearing before the immigration judge that he would not be pursuing the family planning policy claim as a basis of persecution. He specifically waived that claim and made it very clear, as your honors have pointed out, he did waive that claim. The immigration judge used it actually as a basis to support the adverse credibility finding. With respect to that sterilization claim, at one point he claimed on page 100 that he was sterilized. Page 104 said,
he also did go on and decide the question for some reason. I don't know if that makes a difference.
It doesn't, Your Honor. He was discussing it because, for whatever reason, he felt the need to continue to talk about this claim, despite the fact at the beginning of the hearing he made it very clear. On page 74, when specifically asked, what is the theory or what are the theories for your claim for relief, he says, basically, Your Honor, it's religious persecution. And that's what he says, in addition to specifically waiving. He also affirmatively said...
We do have a line of cases that say that if the IJ and the BIA decide a question, then that's sufficient exhaustion. And in a way it is. I mean, it's peculiar because the whole point of a waiver is, no, never mind, you don't have to spend your time on it. We don't know what your views are. Here we do know what their views are because he did decide it. I don't know, the BIA I don't think specifically addressed it, but he did. The IJ did at some length.
Well, but not to any extent other than to say that these were the facts that were presented or the alleged facts presented. And this is on page 60 to 61. He does mention, the wife allegedly submitted to sterilization was dismissed from her job, but that was over 10 years ago, and that Mr. Yu was able to find work. So he was really just recounting that the testimony that was presented at the hearing, which is part of what the IJ does in his decision, is just recount what was said. He wasn't doing it in any way. He was doing it just in the sense of passing through. This is what was found, and that this wouldn't be anything sufficient, that would warrant further consideration, especially considering that he waived it. So I think the IJ may have been just trying to cover his bases in addressing everything in his decision, but really he was not making any finding on that after petitioner explicitly waived that claim. And so that is not part of what this court is reviewing. This court is reviewing his religious persecution claim based on his alleged participation in the Mormon Church. Now, there is substantial record evidence to point to support the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding. For example, these are blatant examples. On page 174 of his written affidavit, he says he was tortured by the police. Page 114 and 120 in his testimony, he described being mistreated by his fellow inmates. He first testified on page 97 that the police did not know about the inmate assaults, but then testified on page 114 and 120 to 121 that they did know. Then he said on page 121 that he never reported these incidents. Then on page 228, he told his evaluating doctor that the police handcuffed and tortured him with some electric shocks on his legs. Then on page 99, in his testimony, he said he was not restrained at all, and the only mistreatment he endured by the police was being pushed and kicked. He was specifically asked at his hearing, on page 113 to 114, is this all the police did? He answered, yes. Then he testified on page 98 to 119 that the police held food on precisely two occasions.
What if this had happened in terms of physical beating while he was in detention. But he never said anything inconsistent with the fact that he was detained for 14 days.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
He never said anything inconsistent with the notion that he was detained for 14 days.
Yes, Your Honor, but this court has held, for example, in El Sahir versus INS, that even arrests and brief detentions that result in little or no physical harm do not rise to the level of
persecution. Wasn't that brief? It was 14 days. I don't think we have a case saying that a 14-day detention as a detention wouldn't be sufficient.
Okay. Well, there were cases. That case actually was a 5 to 6 day detention, so you're right, it wasn't quite 14 days, but the fact is that we don't even know that the detention happened, and just because that part may have been consistently, well, he said 14 days all the times, there's so much that's inconsistent that if you disbelieve so many other things, you can disbelieve the entire, you can discredit his entire story.
That he was beaten by the police.
But, Your Honor, the agency arguably found that didn't even occur. And so, you know, it's hard to determine if anything he said was true when you have this many. As I pointed out, there's so many inconsistencies in the record, Your Honor. You can choose any one of them. They're all material and go to the heart of the claim because they all have to do with the alleged mistreatment that he claims that he experienced during that detention. And so any one of them could be sufficient, but the fact that there are so many of them is overwhelming evidence for an adverse credibility finding. And these are very specific. The immigration judge articulated them. You can see them within the testimony and also between the testimony and the written evidence, both his own affidavit and what he supposedly reported to the doctor. Now, opposing counsel says, well, I don't know if the doctor made that up. And as Your Honor pointed out, why would the doctor make up something that he told him? And if he did, I mean, that just further discredited his case. If you have a doctor that reports incorrect information, you can't credit anything the doctor would have said. So that did not help his case at all, and it just offered more inconsistencies, as did the sterilization claim, because he first claimed that he was sterilized, then he said, no, I wasn't, it was my wife. So arguably that whole claim fell apart as soon as he was completely contradictory in terms of what happened with that claim. It was also, he was given the opportunity, he was confronted with these inconsistencies, he was asked to explain, and in fact a specific explanation was completely unresponsive. He was asked, how did the police know that you were beaten or mistreated by the inmates? And he just said, well, my wife told me that the inmates were demanding money, which just totally did not answer the question. And that was on pages 120 and 121. The immigration judge noted all of these things. And then the immigration judge did go ahead with respect to the withholding claim and say, he did make that finding, like you said, that we were talking about a 14-day detention and that type of thing. And then he said, well, there is no evidence that he would have experienced torture. I mean, he claims torture, but then in his testimony, what he said was being pushed and kicked. And that was hardly anything that would rise to the level of torture. That would cover the CAT claim. And then as far as the persecution also, there was no mistreatment. And what he demonstrated was not anything that would rise to the level of persecution. And especially because he was claiming that he was fired from work afterwards.
You were kept in detention for 14 days and pushed in, and his head was pushed to the table and he was kicked. Would that be sufficient to be persecution?
Your Honor, the judge found that it was not usually that.
Your Honor, did he not find anything about that?
Well, what the immigration judge did say that, and this is on page 60 to 61, that he was kicked a few times and suffered no injuries. The fact that he didn't have anything injurious enough that warranted further notice or medical attention or anything like that. I mean, again, this is even assuming that this happened, which, Your Honor, arguably none of this happened. So this was only the immigration judge.
Do we need to accept that to deny relief here? In other words, I'm far from certain that keeping somebody in prison for 14 days on a restricted diet, apparently, and kicking him and pushing his head isn't persecution. Does that matter to this case?
Well, Your Honor, the fact is that it does matter in the sense of finding a past persecution. That's not always determinative of future persecution.
But does it matter? In other words, is that a pertinent finding, or is the ultimate finding here that he wasn't believable in general, and I don't even know if that happened?
Well, that's certainly what the government would contend, is that there was so overwhelming evidence of incredibility that the court should not even reach the issue of what would constitute persecution, in this case, past persecution. And the fact is, with respect to showing his eligibility, he would have to show future persecution as well. And the fact is that there was nothing in the evidence that showed that he would experience future persecution. Nothing ever happened to him after his release, and he remained in China for a year after that release, and nothing happened to him during that time. And there's no evidence to suggest that the Chinese government is aware of what he's been doing or that he would go back and practice this religion. So there's absolutely no evidence to support an objectively reasonable, or I should say, a more likely than not clear probability standard of the withholding of removal, which is what he would have to show. And certainly nothing that would amount to torture, especially considering he's saying it wasn't Beyer with the acquiescence of the police. He's saying it was the inmates now that did that, and that the police didn't know about it, or maybe they did, but again, it's all an adverse credibility finding in the first instance.
Did the IJ find the respondent not credible in general, as opposed to, I mean, he said that he wasn't credible with regard to the story about his not being able to find a job afterwards, and not credible about the sterilization.
Yeah, it's on page 58, and it's specifically labeled credibility in the record. And then he underlines the credibility in there and then goes on to discuss it. There were substantial material. He meant to say material.
But you see, the one thing he never says is that he wasn't credible with regard to the having been arrested for 14 days. He never says. He says the inconsistent statements pertain to the alleged mistreatment while in police custody and to the alleged sterilizations. And then
the top of page 60 is probably the closest thing to a general statement that I see. Top of page 60, 16 of the decision. The respondent's testimony regarding his detention and his wife's sterilization is vague. The respondent is not credible. His testimony is not reliable. The court has no idea what, if anything, happened to the respondent or his wife in China.
Right, exactly. And we cited in our brief for the principle that when you, if you find no support, you know, if you find an adverse credibility finding as to one, you can find it as to all. And I think that was Wang versus INS. And so as long as one of the immigration judge's material goes to the heart of the claim, you can discount the story in its entirety, which is clearly, I think, what the immigration judge was getting at based on the overwhelming number of inconsistencies.
Thank you very much for your useful time.
I wanted to go back very briefly to the waiver issue and note that on
to the which issue? I'm sorry. I didn't hear it. Oh, to the waiver issue. The
waiver issue on page 61 of the transcript, the judge does say even if the respondent did not want to come. And then he goes on to indicate that the sterilization of his wife was, in fact, voluntary. And that's based in part upon the, the sterilization is based on, in part upon the sterilization document as well as the...
All right, but the question is, if a IJ makes a ruling in the alternative, he says A, there's waiver, B, if there weren't, why doesn't the waiver hold anyway? I mean, it's rare to see a more express waiver. It was absolutely lucid.
But at the same time, there was testimony that was taken with regard to that issue. There was testimony not only, there was questioning not only from the judge, his counsel, as well as the government counsel with regard to this issue, even if you say, even after the waiver. And then the judge actually makes concrete conclusions based on that.
Do you have any case law at all about this question of what happens if there are alternative holdings, one in the merits and one procedural, with regard to exhaustion?
I believe that the court, when it's...
I don't believe, but I'm asking if you have any case law. Thank you. So the case of Yu versus Holder submitted, and thanks to counsel for a useful argument.